Accession number 284 97, reel 3.
Smith, reel 3.
Have we finished the other thing?
When did you finish your Harvard training?
The 30th of September 1943, and I was assessed average on as pupil pilot, navigator, bombing, and air gunnery. In all of them.
Now you've been on the 45th pilots course.
Yeah.
Who were some of the people you remember from that course?
Ray Largo, Alder. These are all leading airmen at the time.
Were you a close-knit group?
Oh yes, very tight. Yes.
How much time would you spend socialising?
Well, we would tend to pick out friends and sort of be more close to them than others, but because of different personalities. But,
what would happen if anybody failed the course?
When they came back to the, this, they just be have to go in the other part of the Navy or Army, you know.
Would they have to leave very quickly from the course when it happened?
Oh, that I wouldn't know, because I wasn't aware of anybody failing out the people that I was with.
So what happened when you'd finished in Canada? Where did you go to then? Did you?
I didn't mention regarding the Harvard flying. We went to Gananoque to do night flying. And that was quite an experience. We lived in tents as opposed to Nissen huts. When we came back to England, we then went to Errol in Scotland. That's near Dundee, to do at number 9 AFU course on to fly masters and 1 and 2, two different types. They were radial engine planes, and started training on those on November the 30th, 1943, and the usual things applied of familiarisation and then straight and level flight and all the rest of it. And eventually, as with the Harvards, you just increase your flying experience.
Was it to increase your flying experience in the UK to get used to familiarising with conditions
in
the UK?
Yes, that's right, and the more powerful plane.
What was the master like as an aircraft?
Oh, it was, we got used to it. It was as I said, because of the power and so on, it was more demanding perhaps. But we did about... wait a minute. 106 hours or so flying on them the daytime flying, and but 7 hours, 8 hours on night flying.
Conditions, weather conditions and climate conditions must have varied considerably.
Yeah, they weren't so good in Scotland at times, as, you know, flying in cloud and that sort of thing. But that was one of the things that was most, one became most concerned with in flying generally, you know, flying. Find yourself in the middle of a cloud, think, where the hell am I, you know. So that's when you have to revert solely to instruments and have confidence in them.
Now, I believe after that, on the January the 18th, 1944, you went to 785 Squadron flying Barracudas.
Yes, that's right, yes. That's at Crail in Scotland.
What was the nature of the squadron? Was it a training squadron, or was it a...
It was for torpedo training. We did... we worked up to... when I started flying in January, Barracudas, but after a few hours, I got flu and had to go into sick bay. And I was told to, when I came out, I was told I came out on the out of sick bay on the Saturday, and I was told to I had to do flying on my own while the others were in ground classes to catch up. So. I was taken out to the aircraft and was asked if I wanted to a cockpit check. And I'm being a bit brazen, I said, no, I'd be all right. Anyway, one of the things you had to do was with the Barracuda was to run the engine up to check the magnetos. And you put had to put the die brakes up to keep the tail down. And you'd rev the, you'd check the mags, and then you're supposed to put the dive brakes back again. Because the dive brakes were also the flaps. They were up for dive brakes, down for flaps. And I taxied out to the, I was, you know, the ground crew took the chopped away, and I tacked it out to the end of the runway. I was given the green light to take off, and I was tearing down the runway, only to find that my throttle friction nut, which was on my left hand side, was loose. So I was trying to tighten that. I suddenly realized the dive brakes were still up, instead of being in the 10 degree flaps that he should have been. I was running out of runway. I pulled the stick back. The aircraft got airborne, stalled, the right wing came down. I went in between two fire hose drying towers. The right wing hit the ground. I did a complete cartwheel. The engine came out. The tail broke, the dinghy came out, and I finished up in a Dutch barn at the crossroads of the camp. So I was extremely lucky. So I was back in sick bay on the Monday with cuts to my face, two bashed knees, and that put me back a bit.
So what was the result of the crash?
The result of that was I was assessed as that was on the 7th of February 1944. I was assessed as being negligent. I was told I would be deprived of 1 month's seniority. in point of fact, I don't think I ever was. I think they've forgotten about that.
What was the Barracuda like as an aircraft? Because it must be much bigger than the other aircraft.
It was a monstrous thing. It was unlike any other aircraft you could see. It was of a design that was putting bits on all the time. It was the most unusual looking aircraft. The RAF used to take the mickey out of us, you know. And in fact, at one stage, we had an RAF station next to Crail called Lucas. And one day I decided I'd show them, and I went over, I did a slow roll in this Barracuda, something I wish I'd never started, because it was not the sort of aircraft to slow roll. It was a bomber plane, and all the dust and what came up, it'd never been upside down before. Anyway, I shouldn't have done that, of course, but I got away with it. Anyway, that's beside the point. After that, I was flown back to Errol by the Lieutenant Commander Norcock, who was the station commander. Flown back to Errol in a Swordfish, which was quite an experience. And the Rosine had to undertake further flying training assessment on the Masters again, which I got through all right.
Was it quite a sobering effect on you, that crash? Did it change your attitude slightly to flying?
Well, yeah, it made you a bit scary. It was a bit scary.
Prior to that, had it been quite good fun, in a sense, the flying? Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first, my first indication of how dangerous planes were. You know, I mean, it was a very severe. I was lucky to get away with it. I was told afterwards that a petty officer near the scene knocked a rating out because he was smoking. You know, they were afraid the plane would go up in smoke.
So when you returned back to Errol, was it really the same pattern again as you did before?
Oh, same thing, yeah. The same thing. Well, not for many. Just a minute. So I did from 22nd of February to 26th to get myself back to ordinary, ready to carry on flying the Barracuda.
How did you feel when you got back in an aircraft after the crash?
All right, generally speaking, but obviously one was... you needed a bit of flying to get your confidence back. But it was... there were... if I can... say that on the Barracuda course we had one or two when I went back to flying the Barracuda on one occasion while on a dive bombing exercise with a RNDSC lieutenant we were going down in the dive about three planes plus the instructor. He was in his own plane, and I was suddenly aware that the altitude was getting too little for safety, and I yelled out to my colleagues to pull out, and a good job we did. Otherwise, a whole lot of us would have gone into the ground because the instructor did. He was killed and left a big crater on the road between Crail and Lucas. But unfortunately, I can't remember his name.
I've heard that the Barracuda had quite a poor reputation among some
pilots. It did for the popping of rivets on the wings. I mean, the Barracuda had folding wings, the same as most naval aircraft, and it was the way the whole thing was constructed and designed was it was a monstrous. It was all right to fly, but it was not a robust aircraft. We used to they used to have a song, the Fairy Barracuda. Oh, nothing could be cruder, seen flying through the sky. The RAF to shut their eyes as one goes by. That's why. That's one of the songs we used to sing.
You used it, obviously, you trained on dive bombing on it.
Yes, and torpedoes, dropping torpedoes. We used to. It was very hazardous dropping torpedoes because you had so much to attend to. You had to we used to fly out over the North Sea. There'd be a target there, an old ship, and you'd have to you'd dive. You'd have to pull out, assess your distance from the ship. You had to have your plane had to be trimmed so it was the wings were level. You had to judge the distance from the sea, the distance from the plane. You had to put an angle of that you were to the ship on an instrument with your left hand, you know, red or whatever, or green, and. And if you dropped your torpedo too high, it would either sink or not or bounce off the water, and it was just an horrific thing because it wasn't just you in the plane, there were others around you in planes doing the same thing, so it was very dicey, and eventually. The authorities decided that it wasn't worth the effort. I'm just looking for these.
With the dive bombing, could I ask you about the dive bombing as well? What kind of angle of dive would you go into?
Oh, really steep, very steep dive. You would have to point your aircraft to the target. I honestly can't recall having any bomb sight. There may have been. There must have been some sort, but I don't recall it. This is dropping torpedoes.
What type of torpedoes would you drop? Would you drop a dummy one or a live one?
We used to have small ones to drop on targets, which would explode, so you could see. But I didn't finish saying about the torpedoes. We had... the ones we dropped were painted yellow, and they would run for so long, and then they would come to the surface, and trawlers used to pick them up so they could be reused. There was obviously no explosive in them. But
How had you been allocated to torpedo bombers?
Pardon?
How had you been allocated to torpedo bombers?
That was... as far as I can remember, it was by choice, I think. It was choice. I mean, being a steady sort of person, I preferred that rather than being that crazy.
So that period while you were at Crail, was that really dive bombing and torpedo practice with the Barracuda?
Yes.
Was there anything else that you did there at that time?
Pardon me. We went at Crail, you mean? Well, when we finished the course at Crail, we had to go to East Haven to do... deck landings or practice, and uh, I did. We used to do circuits and bumps. We'd have a batsman at the end of the runway, and they had lines across the end of the runway to represent the reservoirs that you would have on board ship, and you would have to keep going round and plonking down on these lines as instructed to obey the batsman. And we did a lot of that.
Were these batsmen pilots?
Ex-pilots, oh yes, and they'd be trained to do the batting. They were just two yellow-coloured round discs on sticks, and they used to run over them to signal to you what to do.
Did you have to obey that batsman?
Oh, you had to implicitly. Otherwise, you would fail. It'd be no good at all.
Can you tell me about the deck landings that you did once you'd done the...
Yes, I can. The only aircraft carrier I'd ever seen was one of the old original Argoses as we sailed out of... going to Canada, presumably. And I'd never been close to one at all. But on 11th of July, in company with three other pupils and an instructor in another plane, we flew out to HMS Ravager, R-A-V-A-G-E-R, which was a small escort carrier. And you could imagine, you'd look down at it. No, you were instructed that the instructor would land on first, and you had to go down and land behind him. And you can imagine looking at this postage stamp down there, think, God, am I going to have to land on that? Anyway, you did your circuit and you approached and you landed on. I did eight landings like that. And it took off again.
Did you have any problems with your deck landings?
No, I got, I was assessed as average. On both.
What kind of approach would you
make? On the deck landing, so it was above average at that time.
What kind of approach would you have to make to the carrier?
Well, you'd do a circuit, come in on a right one turn, and point yourself towards the back end of the carrier, and have a reasonable height. Because you'd slowly descend, you'd then see the batsman, and he would signal whether you were too high or too low, and whether you wanted more throttle, he would encourage you to do it. And you'd have to be a few miles above your stalling speed, with your nose slightly raised, come in at that sort of slow speed, and then when with your hook down, and when you when he gave you the when it crossed his bats, you had to shut your engine and hope and that you dropped down and that your hook would catch.
What was visibility like for you in the Barracuda?
Oh, it was pretty good. I mean, the pilots in the Corsairs, fighters, used to have great difficulty because the nose was so long. But in any case, you would very often have to come in sort of slewed and the last minute kick the rudder to straighten up.
So you did your deck landing training?
Yes. I mentioned when I was flying Barracudas at Crail that we had the occasion when we lost the RN lieutenant got into the ground. But on another occasion, a friend of a fellow airman and myself got German measles, and we were put into sick bay. And when we came out, we were told we'd have to catch up with the flying again. And at that time, there were about three of us up, and we had an instructor, but we were going into dive, and the other fellow, he was midshipman Jakes. He went into the water. We all felt a sort of air pocket. You know, the nose was dropping. Temporarily lost control. He must have lost control altogether. So he just went straight into the water. And two of my friends on the course also, who were stationed elsewhere, and were lost at sea in Swordfish at night flying. Don Howes, who came from my own, he was a policeman in Norwich. And another chap called Fred Sumner. The other thing of interest is that while we were at Crail, we were invited, the Russians used to come over ferrying aircraft, twin-engine aircraft, I think they were Albemarles, or as far as I can remember. And we were invited to their mess for a drink, of course. And being Russians, they... It was bottoms up all the time, or as they used to say, Baruska. And I'm afraid I made a fool of myself by getting drunk and sick. But the interesting part was when you saw them the next day and you waved to them, they didn't want to know you, who you were. They didn't know anything about you. But that was quite an interesting episode. Where are we doing?
That's the first page.
Are you ready? We were sent to the Isle of Man, and going up on the train to the port, among ourselves, we virtually sorted out who we had as air crew. And I teamed up with a sub-lieutenant Van Oppen, who was part Dutch and part English, and leading airman Dobson, who was as an air gunner, and so when we got to the Isle of Man, we were all sorted out.
Did they allow you to do that with crew notes?
You had your own choice. You chose who you were going to want to fly with at that stage. You weren't told.
So why did you choose your people? Was there any reason?
Just talking to each other on the way up, you know, talking, chatting, and realising that we had to do that. They had to sort ourselves out. And
was it an added responsibility to you as pilot now that you would have
yes, because you needed a navigator and you needed an air gunner. The Barracuda had a turret, and also I had a gun at the facing downwards, you know, towards the rear of the rear of the plane. But on one occasion, while we were training on the Isle of Man, we took off, several of us. It was foggy, but we were told that it was okay to fly. And I think that would be on about the 11th of August. And we took off, and it was so misty that we had to come back straight away. and one of the pilots actually landed on the perimeter track in the fog. So on that occasion, we just went back to the mess and got drunk with the Isle of Man bottled beer, which was, you know, red label and blue label. But by and large, the training in on the Isle of Man was bombing, and because of the chance of anti-submarine bombing and homing, using beacons to get back to base and that sort of thing, and flare dropping and navigation, with all three others operating together as a crew.